This episode is brought to you by Fetch. Fetch is a kennel alternative right here in Denver, not a traditional doggy daycare or boarding school. They offer one-on-one private pet care for all kinds of pets, both furry and non-furry. And their employees are experienced, insured, bonded, and background checked, so you can rest easy knowing your pet is in good hands. Basically, they know pets. I used to watch a Burmese mountain dog named Sven, who was just like walking a polar bear. It was insane. Fetch offers pet sitting, dog walking, pet taxi, medication administration, and more. And he hated going on walks. I could like walk him around the block and then he was like, he just liked to lay in the bathtub. So if you're looking for high quality pet care you can trust, check out Fetch at northdenver.fetchpetcare.com. That's northdenver.fetchpetcare.com.
What's your morning routine? Whether you're getting on the bus, jumping on your bike, hopping in the car, or just walking over to your desk, CityCast Denver is right there with you. If you love starting your days listening to a new episode of CityCast Denver, why not join our membership program? For as little as $8 a month, you can have access to an ad-free listening experience and let us know we've got your support to keep making great episodes. Join today at membership.citycast.fm. Thanks. Today on CityCast Denver. Increasingly over the last few years, there's been talk at the state capitol of reforming Denver's transit provider, RTD, especially from our governor, Jared Polis. And now, along with some powerful Democrats in the legislature, he's got a big new plan to upend our whole transit system as we know it. So I've got our chief Polis watcher, CPR politics reporter Andy Kenny, on today to explain what exactly the governor is thinking. And stick around for former Speaker of the House Terrence Carroll, who's already pushing back on a big piece of the governor's reform plan. Today is Wednesday, April 3rd. I'm Paul Caroli, in for Bree Davies, and here's what Denver's talking about. Andy Kenny, welcome back to CityCast Denver.
Thanks so much for having me.
Well, I'm so glad you're here because you're my Polis watcher.
Well, I'm surprised you had me back because I think I talked about Tabor for 40 minutes last time I came on.
And I loved it. And now we're going to talk about one of my other favorite topics, RTD, public transit.
Yeah, I'm here.
So there was a big bill that you reported on last week. It may or may not have been introduced at the time people hear this. We'll have an update at the end of the episode.
Yep, but it's coming.
It's coming. We know it's coming. So basically, this bill is from some of Polis' allies in the state legislature. They're co-sponsors on this. And the big idea is to reform the way RTD, that's the Regional Transportation District, which runs our public transit, is governed.
Yeah, that's the biggest change, is changing how the leadership board of RTD is elected in a big way.
And so what exactly is the change?
Well, right now there are 15 RTD board members. Mm-hmm. They're elected from individual regions all across the district, which, you know, ranges from all the way down south in Parker, out into Jeffco, north, big, huge district, millions of people live there. All these different little areas of RTD get to elect their own board member. This would slash the board down to just 7 members instead of 15. Only 5 of them would actually still be elected. Instead of being elected by district, they would be elected at large. So all of RTD, the entire district, would weigh in on each of those races. And then another 2 members would be just directly appointed by the governor.
And why do they want to do this?
Well, there's a couple different reasons. The big argument you could make is that they say, the sponsors, Democratic lawmakers in the House, the Senate, say that RTD's board is just kind of big and unwieldy. 15 people is a lot compared to some other districts.
Right. That makes sense. Because that's this quote from Molly McKinley from Denver Streets Partnership. She says something along those lines in your story. You've seen this dynamic where board members are currently advocating for their part of the region. And so we end up with a system where services spread out thin like peanut butter instead of focusing on ridership.
Yeah, and that goes to part of the other reason is, like, so you could look at it from two angles. And one is that, like, just it can be hard to recruit 15 people to earn $12,000 a year to do a ton of work.
$12,000 is what they're paid
That's
for?
That's their salary,
wow.
Yeah.
Wow, okay.
And you end up with, like, unfilled seats, or rather seats that get filled by write-in votes. And it can just, again, it can be hard to manage a 15-person board, arguably.
So some people are just like, this current system's not working great. Some kind of reform is necessary. But why this reform?
Well, why this reform kind of part of it goes back to, I think, what you were just saying, that quote from Molly McKinley. When you have 15 different districts, like 15 little fiefdoms, not, that makes it sound like more dramatic than it is. But when you have everybody coming from a different part of the district, some of these reformers argue that it has bad incentives for the system. Everybody is fighting for their piece of the pie and saying, like, well, I come from way down south, or I come from way out west, and we need our train or bus line because our taxpayers in this district want something out of RTD, which they're paying taxes into, which is like not necessarily a great way to run a transit system, because a lot of what transit reformers want is a smaller and more compact RTD.
Like an RTD that could provide more frequent, more reliable service in the urban core, as opposed to the suburbs, where maybe there are more representatives on the RTD board, but there's fewer demands for everyday transit.
Yeah, it goes back to the original critique of RTD and fast tracks, which is that you made a big giant district and you tried to make everybody happy at the same time. And the result is that you have like really long transit lines that don't run that often, that aren't necessarily that useful. And so from some of these transit reformers' point of view, maybe it would be easier to consolidate the lines if you didn't have everybody fighting for their own line to go out to their area. But the counterpoint to that is like, okay, but I'm out here in Parker or wherever, I'm paying taxes, I want to have a direct seat on that board. And so don't take that away from me.
Interesting. Well, help me understand the other piece of this, which is that some people that you quoted in your article, I also talked to someone running for the RTD board recently, and they're calling this a power grab from Governor Polis. How would this be a power grab?
Well, if you just look at the numbers, like the governor will have more influence over the board after this than he does now. Because right now, the governor appoints 0 out of 15 members. After this, the state administration would have influence, would appoint 2 out of 7, so nearly a third of the board. So it essentially makes, you know, you have a direct way for the governor to influence the board through his appointees. And actually, an earlier version of this bill, according to the Denver Post, would have allowed the governor to appoint, I believe, almost the entire board. They scaled that back.
Interesting.
Anyway. Long story short is that the governor gets more direct influence on this board. And you could also argue it could be easier for Democratic leaders or, and others to have more influence in the elections if they're in at-large format too.
So what is the governor, what do you think he would want to do with all this power?
Well, one thing that the governor is focused on is like the administration wants to build this Front Range rail project. They want to build this rail project that is going to go first north from Denver up toward Fort Collins, and then much later will go south from Denver down to Pueblo, eventually even Trinidad. And they want RTD to be a big part of that project. There's a separate bill that is really going to try to bring RTD into both funding part of that train, funding the train to Boulder, which many people will be familiar with, has been a long-running bugaboo that the governor and many others have wanted to finish. So they want to use RTD's money and planning ability to help build part of that front range rail line.
So it's that old grudge, that train that never got built, that a lot of people in Boulder are still upset about. The governor, of course, a Boulderite himself. You think he maybe holds this grudge still?
I'm trying to remember if he's talked much on the record about whether or not he specifically wants it. But what we do know is that, like, besides many people in Boulder feeling like this train was promised and owed, I know that some of the planners of Front Range Rail also think that it's a political liability and that they have to get the train to Boulder built in order to convince people in that northern metro area to vote for the funding for the bigger rail project.
Interesting. So you have to rebuild trust first before you can go for something even bigger.
Because the perception is that, like, why are all these people in Boulder and Thornton and Longmont, why are they going to vote to pay more taxes toward another train when they literally voted 20 years ago to pay taxes toward a train that still hasn't arrived yet? So, you know, no matter what the specific motivation among the different politicians is, they're also arguing that, like, look, we got to fulfill the promise of 2004 before we go building more. Otherwise, voters are never going to approve the sales tax that we need to build the bigger transit project here.
Interesting. So the governor may or may not be motivated by this broken promise of a train to Boulder, but is there any other reason why now is the time that he wants to focus on this Front Range passenger rail over, say, transit in urban core Denver?
This has been in the works for a while, Front Range Rail has. And it's especially pertinent now because there's a lot of federal money available at the moment for intercity rail. The federal, I think it was the bipartisan infrastructure bill, made billions of dollars available for states and groups of cities to pitch these big projects that connect city to city. And Colorado is in the process of securing some of that money to go again, you know, potentially Pueblo to Denver to Fort Collins, maybe also Denver to Steamboat Springs. But in order to get that federal money, you got to put up some state money too. So if you're talking about whatever, tens, hundreds of millions of dollars of federal money, you got to come up with some certain amount of state money to pull that in, which is why they're talking about fees on rental cars. That's why they're talking about going to the ballot and asking people to approve a sales tax as well.
Hmm. Interesting. So the governor is strategizing, looking at the national landscape, trying to get all this money together. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering about Denver, though. Where does this RTD reform leave Denver apart from the Front Range passenger rail situation?
That's a good question. And we're still seeing what the reaction in Denver to this whole RTD reformatting thing is. But certainly you're seeing some backlash from some progressives and from some others on the RTD board to this idea of the governor or the Democratic administration really changing RTD. And they're worried, some of these Denver lawmakers and politicians, they're worried that RTD will end up spending its whole piggy bank on the train to Boulder, when some people potentially want to see that money dedicated to building up, you know, services closer to Denver, building up bus lines, et cetera. Because this Front Range Rail District could eat up a lot of money, a lot of RTD's budget.
Yeah, yeah. And it's the big prize. I mean, you can understand why they are excited about it, because it could be a big crowning achievement for a governor to say, oh, I built this shiny new train. Who doesn't love a nice new train? But the meat and potatoes of running a transit system reliably and effectively every day, it's a little less sexy.
Yes, and that's where there's somewhat of a fault line on this, where, like, of course, the governor, yeah, wants to fulfill the promise, wants to do this big state-changing, up and down, connect all the parts of Colorado. But you'll hear from transit advocates that they don't want to build a train to Boulder. They think that the bus to Boulder is pretty great. You'll hear transit advocates that say, like, we want to pour that money into BRT, bus rapid transit. We want to, like, make transit, like we were saying earlier, a lot more frequent and compact. So you could see kind of a fight there over where RTD should be spending its money and how much it should be helping with Front Range Rail, which makes this question of who should be running RTD, how should we elect RTD's leader, makes it a lot more pertinent.
Andy Kenny, thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you.
Since Andy first reported on its existence, this RTD reform proposal has already been seeing pushback from Denverites and especially elected officials of color. So after this short break, I'm talking to former Speaker of the State House, Terrence Carroll, who represented parts of Denver, about why he spoke out against the governor's plan as soon as he heard it. All right, Terrence Carroll, welcome back to CityCast Denver.
Thanks for having me back.
Terrence, I want to start with a tweet you sent last week. It was right after some early reports about this huge transit reform bill that some of Governor Polis's allies are working on. You wrote, having the entire RTD board elected at large, as opposed to repping specific districts, is particularly troubling because historically all at-large elected boards have diminished the representation of minority voters. Can you explain what is so troubling about that?
You know, one of the things that's troubling about it, perhaps the most important, and I'll quote Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg. She says that at-large districts are just another version of the same old dirty bag of tricks used to diminish the influence of minority voters. That's the troubling thing about it. And when you look historically at the use of at-large districts, not just in the South, where people traditionally have heard about how at-large districts have been used to disenfranchise voters, but in other parts of the country, in the North and in Colorado and places like that, wherever you see at-large seats, generally speaking, you've had a diminished opportunity for voters of color, black and brown voters, to vote, to actually elect the candidate of their choice. There's a reason that Congress actually banned the use of at-large races for determining members of Congress. You can't elect a congressperson through at-large voting. There's a reason that the Voting Rights Act of 1965 looked at large district with side eye. And there have been court cases about this. So they're not bad per se, but it's pretty much per se.
I think I hear you, but I'm not sure I totally understand why, you know, how it works logistically. Like, I wonder if you could give me the explain it like I'm a 5-year-old version of like why an at-large district has this effect.
Okay, for example, look at what they propose with RTD. Mm-hmm. If you elect, you go from 15 to 7 members, 5 out of the 7 are elected at large, the other 2 are appointed by the governor. Mm-hmm. So what you end up having, as opposed to where if you voted by district, and so I live in Northeast Denver, mm-hmm. say I lived in Northeast Denver, my RTD person is elected for my community. And if my community happens to be predominantly Black, predominantly Brown, there's probably a pretty good chance that the person who's elected for my seat will reflect my community. Hmm. You move this out to at large where everybody's in this big pool. And when you think about the area of service for RTD, that's bigger than every congressional district in terms of the population size. It's bigger than every state house or Senate district. And so what you're saying is that everybody's in the same pool. And it diminishes the opportunity for people in my neighborhood to elect a candidate of my choice, because then they're thrown into this big pool where it's not necessarily certain that the candidate of the choice from my neighborhood will get elected, because then he's competing or she's competing or they're competing with someone from Castle Rock or someone from Highlands Ranch or someone from Boulder who may have more resources or someone who may have higher name recognition. And this is actually not just about Black and Brown folks. It's also about neighborhoods with less resources. So what we're saying is that more well-financed candidates, candidates who have greater access to resources, will have more of a chance to be elected. And sometimes you'll end up with folks from all in the same district, same neighborhood, being elected to represent a much broader body of people. Now, if we look at this, take a step back and look at it historically and what's happened in the South and parts of the North, parts of the Southwest, and parts of the West, what the academic data and the research shows in this particular area is that when you have this big amorphous at large pool that's happening, that more diverse voices are not heard in that conversation. It's just diminished to a large degree.
That's fascinating that that's what the data shows. Because when I first heard about this proposal, I thought the exact opposite. I thought, you know, with RTD, as we're talking about, if I were a candidate and I was trying to win one of these seats in an at-large election, I would try to campaign where there's the densest number of people, where there's the most number of people, where I could convince the most people to vote for me. And that would lead me to downtown Denver.
Right.
And isn't that a good thing, though, if we're thinking about a transit system? Shouldn't the densest, most high concentration of people be supported by a public transit system?
I think public transit systems are a great equalizer in terms of economic mobility, economic opportunity, because it gives folks an opportunity to get to their jobs, to get to schools. And of course, it helps people who live in very dense environments because it gives them an option other than a car to get around. That's a good thing. Density does not mean political power, or it doesn't necessarily equate to the fact that I live in the most dense neighborhood, therefore I have the most political power. Unfortunately, because of the way we do politics, it costs money to actually get elected to office. And I'm not saying just because you're Black or Brown or a person of color or a minority group that you don't have access to funds. I'm not saying that as a absolute rule. What I'm saying is that oftentimes when we look at our urban cores and our urban centers, you don't necessarily find the folks with the most money and the folks with the most political power. At large districts preference candidates who have access to capital to run, because when you have to run in an at-large district, say the entire metro area, you're electing 5 people to represent 1.5 million folks, or whatever the number is right now. Mm-hmm. Think about the cost and the resources you need to campaign across such a broad area. So we're saying we want you to campaign from as far south as the farthest southern edge of Douglas County, wherever that southern boundary is for RTD, all the way out west to Boulder, and actually into Nederland, because RTD goes into Nederland and places like that, mm-hmm. north up and in North Glen and in Broomfield, and east out to whatever the eastern boundary of Aurora is right now, because Aurora changes all the time. Mm-hmm. So it's not about the density. It's who has the access to the capital and the funds to campaign across such a broad area and such a broad constituency of people. And it also makes it hard on the voters too, because then they just can't look at the guy running in a district or the woman running in a district or the person running in their district and have easy access to them. It's just not possible.
Hmm. So in response to these concerns, you're not the only one who has concerns about equity and disenfranchisement. CPR reporter Andy Kenny asked one of the co-sponsors of this bill, William Lindstedt, about this. And he reportedly pointed out that, quote, RTD has only had a handful of Black and Latino board members in its current setup, and many of those were appointed rather than elected. Does that make sense to you?
And the point is, I want to even, like, it's hard to dignify that, because it's a way to, it's obfuscating the issue. What you're saying is that we haven't elected a bunch of Black and brown folks, so therefore it doesn't matter. That's wrongheaded. Mm-hmm. And that is a complete lack of understanding of what voter enfranchisement is supposed to mean and what having access to the ballot box means. Just because you haven't elected someone, and we have elected Black and brown folks at RTD board, mm-hmm. just in recent history, you can name Chris Martinez, Chantel Lewis. I mean, we can just go down the line of people, Gloria Holiday, I mean, in the past. I mean, we can talk about those people who are Black and brown, but don't need to. The point of the matter is not that we have not elected or elected very few. It's the fact that they have the opportunity to get elected. Mm. And this proposal turns that on its head and says, we're going to adopt a system or propose a system that by every objective standard, both academically, politically, and practice, has shown that it disenfranchises minority voters and keeps them from having the opportunity, or greatly diminishes their opportunity, to elect the candidates of their choice. It doesn't even mean it has to be a Black candidate. It's the candidate of their choice, whether it's Black, brown, purple, green, or indifferent.
Whoever.
It's the candidate of their choice.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that's what this is about.
Right. I see. I understand what you're saying. So we've also elected a lot of Black and brown people to the state legislature who are going to be working on this bill and talking about this proposal. Yet none of them are co-sponsors, at least not as reported so far. I found this meaningful that the bill's co-sponsors so far are Faith Winter, Meg Froelich, and William Lindstedt, three white Democrats from the north suburbs of Denver. Do you find that meaningful?
It's something to take note of. And I consider Meg a friend. And so, and I should say this, I do not ascribe ill intent to any of them. Some people just have blind spots. And this may be a blind spot on their behalf. Because think about it. If you're from a northern suburb, if you're from Boulder, if you're from Thornton, if you're from Broomfield or someplace like that, or from Westminster, you may not have a large constituency that requires use of public transportation necessarily. Mm-hmm. And when you look at the metro area's demographics, they may not have a large constituency of people of color who are starving for representation and representation that hears their voice. And so it's easy when you may have lived, and I don't know them in a way where I can say how they grew up or how they lived.
Right.
But by virtue of being a white elected official in a predominantly white state, there's a certain degree of privilege that they hold. And sometimes when you hold privilege like that, it's hard to understand how the perception of something like this would impact someone who looks like me, a Black man who is the son of, the grandson of a sharecropper, the son of a Black woman who was born in 1917 who was well into her adult life when she actually had a consistent right and access to the ballot box with the passage of the Voting Rights Act of 1965. So, of course, I'm going to be sensitive to this.
Yeah.
And many other black and brown folks in this state are going to be sensitive to this because most of us understand the value of the ballot box, not just because we know we need to vote, but because we come from a history of not having consistent access to the ballot box that's protected by law.
Is this your only criticism of the RTD proposal, or do you feel like there's other aspects of what the governor's working on that you'd like to see go a different way?
No, it's my main criticism, because I don't think anyone would argue that RTD is this perfect functioning transit district.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think so either.
I mean, you just look at what just happened this week, which is unfortunate for RTD, that or this past week when the governor's proposal starts to be talked about, RTD then votes to reduce service on some pretty significant lines. Mm-hmm. And when folks, like I talked to some attorneys in my office who would prefer to take the train into work or text the bus into work. But when you have a transit system that, whether it's true or not, people feel like you can get downtown more quickly by driving your car than getting on the light rail, that's a problem. Or they feel like they can get to the airport more quickly by car than taking a train. The whole idea behind public transit is that it's supposed to be the better alternative to using your own private vehicle because you can get to more places more efficiently without the need to get in your car, find a parking space, put gas in your car. RTD, by many people's estimation, has not met that basic threshold of what effective service is. And so to the extent that RTD needs reform, I'm all ears in terms of what the governor proposes. My problem is that disenfranchising people to get to that reform is not a good idea.
Well, Terrence Carroll, thanks so much for joining me and helping me understand this.
Oh, thanks for having me. I had a great time.
As of this recording, none of Governor Polis's allies have formally introduced their big RTD reform bill. Since Terrence and I spoke, however, I did hear from other sources that the possible switch to at-large representation is still very much under discussion. I've also heard that both the mayor's office and the current RTD board are not psyched about this reform idea at all. Meanwhile, Colorado Newsline reported this week that the Front Range Passenger Rail District will vote this month on putting a tax question on our ballots this November to fund the Front Range Rail. So these conversations are all still in progress, and we'll let you know more as soon as we do. That's all for today here on CityCast Denver. If you enjoyed the show, why not take a minute to tell your representative on the RTD board about us? Rate the show wherever you get your podcasts, and subscribe to our morning newsletter and learn more about us at denver.citycast.fm. We'll be back tomorrow morning with more news from around the city. See you then.
Choo-choo. No?
That's fine.
We don't do that here?
You can do choo-choo.
No, I don't think so.
You can do give me an enthusiastic choo-choo, though. Don't give me a half-hearted choo-choo.
That was all the heart I had for that.